Forbes Real 3. We're talking about the trip out to Dungannon. We picked up a couple of things. Anything else about, you know, the journey when you were going across?
No, not really. It was uneventful. Vehicles. We got separated from our vehicles. They went away on another ship. And we just landed on the other side and waited until our vehicles were disembarked and joined up. But we were wondering whether the reception would be pleasant or unpleasant. We didn't know. But we got quite a surprise when the first civilian we met had a tray of coffee and cups and biscuits and things. And that was the ice was broken. We never looked back after that. We had so many friends in Northern Ireland, so much so that our stay there was really first class. Quite a lot of our chaps married Irish girls, actually. It was so. I nearly did myself, actually. Yeah.
Was I mean, how did they show their friendliness? You know, I mean, did they organise things for you, the civilians, or what was so good about it?
Well, you were just treated that. I mean, if you didn't turn up each night for tea or for a meal or anything like that, they came up looking for you. Yeah, and if you were on guard. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, you might be on guard and walking about, and suddenly a civilian would appear with a flask of coffee and things like that. They just looked after us.
Where were you billeted?
We were billeted in the parochial hall. And the funny thing about the parochial hall was it was situated between the Protestant church and the Catholic church. And you know, there was a strong sectarian thing then, probably more so than there is even now, although it's bad enough now. But the family that I was with, he was the local barber, and he cut all the hair of all the troops. And I mean, he didn't do it for nothing, so he did very well, and he was so pleased with the custom and all that. Anyway, it was his home that we, Nelson Taylor, Willie Fenwick, John Crichton, the four of us, we were there every night. And the cuisine and the hospitality was marvellous, really. It was great.
And what were you doing while you were in Dungannon?
Well, we were sort of driving round on so-called schemes, picking apples off the trees.
What sort of schemes were there? What was meant to be happening?
Well, we had Mark 6Bs there, and carriers, and we were just doing routine regimental training. You know, going out. Getting reading map brief references and wireless procedure and all that sort of thing, just getting used to tank movements and communications, things like that.
And what would you be doing?
All the time the boys in the tanks were doing this, I was following around with probably petrol wagons. It was also our job to look after the petrol wagons, although the tech storeman was in charge of the load of petrol. And at that time they had what they call, they didn't have jerry cans, they had expendable tins, and they were terrible things for leaking and everything like that. So while we were there, there was quite a lot of, you might call it black market, but there was a lot of friendliness towards the civilians by an odd gallon of petrol, you know, because.
And who would be responsible for that? Did you get involved in a bit of it? No,
but I knew who did, and he was a real spiv.
Was it one of the regiment? Who was it?
Well, I knew two fellas that supplied their what do you call it, their Irish family. with a gallon or two. In fact, I must admit, I used to fill a bottle sometimes out of the... Sometimes there would be a tin that had leaked and there would be about a half a gallon of petrol in the bottom of it. Well, it wasn't usable. The tin was useless, so I used to put it in a bottle and take it down to Bob Walker, the barber, and he put it in his car and nothing was said.
You obviously don't want to say who, but you know, the person who was responsible for it, were they making money out of it, or was it just...
No.
It was sort of just doing someone a favour.
It was sort of payment for the hospitality, yeah.
Was there any, something we should have mentioned earlier, you were in the stores, yeah. Wasn't much trouble with pilfering or from the stores, by anybody, either within the store...
Quartermasters were notorious for acquiring things. Nelson was quite good at it too. I think they all met in the sergeant's mess and discussed, "Have you got any spare so and so?" And things like that, you know, and things like cutlery, housewives. You know what a housewife is, and these sort of things, you know, he accumulated a reserve of these sort of things. If anybody lost one, he got it out of the reserve. Well, we weren't really bothered about...
But again, that was for the good of the unit, not for his own. He wasn't going to profit from that.
No, just on the pals market. Yeah, there was never any...
But there was no pilfering from the stores that you were...
Not really. There was no point in it.
He was adding to the store.
Yeah, I've known kit inspections where somebody had lost so-and-so, and as the officer came up the line examining something, the fellas who had been examined would slip up and, you know, fill up the gaps. That sort of thing went on, but not any pilfering from the stores.
Anything else about what you were up to in... there seems to have been a lot of training in convoy driving. I mean, would that affect you at all?
We did tour around Armagh and around the Coal Island. I can remember Coal Island, one of the tanks got what they call reverse steering. Which means that I know what happens mechanically, but it's no point in explaining it to you. But it means instead of when you pulled to go right, instead of that you went left. The pinions worked opposite, and you got what you call reverse steering, which meant that you were suddenly turning the wrong way. And we were coming through Coal Island, and there was a flimsy sort of butcher's van at the side of the road. With a Heath Robinson construction which protected his beef. And it was absolutely flattened, you know, he just went right over it. And I don't know whether that butcher would get compensation. I suppose he would. Compensation would come his way. That's one little incident that happened on some of these schemes. And then there was a publication called the Ballygolly News, which was a source of comedy reading in the regiment, because the reporter there always got things wrong and made funny remarks about the regiment, you know, and it was every week there was something funny turned up in the Ballygolly News.
It was just funny because it was wrong, you got the wrong
end of the story. No, it was the way the Irish wit. I can't remember any of them because there was, but they raised a laugh.
They were meant to be funny.
I think so, yeah. I think so. Then there was, went firing, the boys went firing to, I think, Ballykindler. There was a range there, and it was run by the Royal Ulster Regiment, and they were a typical infantry regiment. When you went, if you walked into the gate of the camp, slovenly. There would be a voice come from nowhere, you know, that sort of style of place. Very straight and proper and whitewashed all over the place, Ballykinler.
Did you go there?
Yes, just because it went up on orders that you had to fire so many rounds on the range.
This is a rifle range again?
Yeah, well, there was more than just rifles. There was Tommy guns and targets that moved and things like that.
And what about, were you beginning to get fed up being in the quarter? So did you want to sort of get on the tanks and being a tank crew at that time, or were you happy in doing a good job in the quartermaster stores?
I got kind of fed up with the type of merchandise all the time, you know. So a job came up for B Squadron Technical Stores.
Now, when was this? While they were at Dungannon?
It wasn't in Dungannon. It was when they went south to Besbrook on the border.
Well, that's if there's nothing else about Dungannon, then you...
There was various... We did a lot of parades in this town square. There's a lovely square there, and we did a lot of parades there.
What would it be like? What would a typical parade be like?
In
the square?
I think being the kind of men we were, we took a pride in our movements, our marching and everything. I think we were quite good at it. I don't think the guards would have completely disapproved of that in the regiment. And we put on a show. The civilians were there all around it, and it was put on a... And I remember once that the regimental... No, he wasn't the regiment. He was the sergeant major who was to be dressing up HQ squadron. And we were all lined up, and the order was to given to eyes right dress. No, eyes left. Whatever it was, Sergeant Major Blackie was at the wrong end of the line. So instead of looking at him, we were looking the other way. I can remember that. And that was right in the middle of a parade, and all the officers and the colonel and everything were all there on parade. And you know how you had three ranks and the officers are all intermittently along the front. They were all looking at Blackie, and I suppose they were disapproving. And he suddenly took to his heels and ran down the bar. And I heard sort of cat calls from the civilians, hooray or something like that, you know. That's one thing I could remember about some of the parades in Dungannon.
Now, when you left Dungannon, there was a bit of a problem because you left just around Christmas time. Apparently caused a bit of a stir.
Oh, yeah, there was the big objections in the town. Everybody had their plans for parties and things. And they wrote to Winston Churchill, and some member of his staff answered and said that he couldn't do anything about it. But when they got to Besbrook and the Christmas time came over, he would see that the maximum amount of weekend leave was given to the regiment. So every taxi and bus and thing was commandeered in Newry to go up to Dungannon for Christmas.
Did you go?
Yep. Well, if I hadn't gone up, Bob Walker and his wife would have been down looking for me.
What was the situation where you were down at Besbrook, was it, near Newbury?
Yeah, Besbrook.
What was the situation there? Was it as friendly there?
Well, it was such a contrast to Dungannon. There wasn't the hospitality there. There was a sort of... We're too near the border, and I think there was a sort of nucleus of IRA or something there.
You hadn't come across that in Dungannon. Just a
slight sectarian business there. But in Besbrook it was different. But we used to go into Newry a lot. It was quite a nice town, and we used to go in there, and there was a little tram ran from Besbrook to Newry. And many a times the tram wasn't operating, but the boys, some of the boys, got on the tram and drove it willy-nilly into Newry. It was a little low-deck tram that was used for workers, because Bessbrook had a lot of weaving and clothing factories there. Moygashel, just outside, was a special type of fabric, Moygashel. Anyway, that's Bessbrook.
And it's there that you came out of the stores. Now, tell us why you did that.
I was still in the technical stores. I came out of the clothing store.
Right. Went now, why did you go to the club?
I thought, I'd met quite a lot of the fellas in B Squadron, and I thought it was a good move. And
So technical stores of B Squadron?
Yeah. And then I went on a course to England. I went across to the Queen's Bays. All the technical stores were all put in bins and packed away because they were going across to France. So I was a fortnight there doing nothing but eating and drinking in the Naffy with the technical store man, and him and I became very friendly. And the funny thing is, when you leave a course, you're always interviewed by the OC. So I went in to see him, and he said, how did you get on? I said, I got on quite well, but didn't learn anything about technical stores. He said, you can't be helped. He said, that's okay. I'll just put the report in as satisfactory.
Now, what was the job in technical stores? What were your duties?
Well, you had bins of all the different parts of repair work and the fitters. You worked with the fitters. That was their source of supply for all sorts of shims, and you also had parts of the bogies and the suspension and things like that. You had all these sort of things to look after, and also you had to keep a check of the petrol. And there was one incident in Bessbrook. We had a chap called, better not say his name. He was he worked with the Fife Electric Power Company in Fife before the war. And him being in the electrical line, he was given the job as regimental electrician. But he was so hopeless that if he wanted to get into a vehicle and start it up, you press the horn or something like that, you know. It was so hopeless. Well, he worked as an electrician. He hadn't been discovered by this time, and he worked with the fitters, and the technical stores on that particular occasion was in the same Nissen hut as the fitters, and I had a desk with all my papers on it, and my books and my vouchers and things, and a pile of flimsies, which were the things that you signed out petrol to the vehicles. I had the pile there, and the Mitchell came into the hut from the back, and he wanted some tin for a job, and the tin that he brought in was an empty petrol tin, but was covered with frost, white frost, and there was a chap soldering in the one corner. And he picked up the blow lamp and he started to play on the petrol tin. Of course, you realise what happened. It blew up and split apart, and Mitchell got a cut on his leg, and he went away into the field. It was a field at the back. And my flimsies were all floating down the hut. And we were all black spots. And Tom Stewart, the sergeant fitter, he went out and grabbed Mitchell and started to clobber him. So we had a fight on our hands as well. These are the sort of things that were happening at that time.
Was he punished at all for that?
No, he was punished much later, but I'll come to that later. That was another episode, much later actually, during an exercise.
So who was your NCO in the petrol store? You'd be away from Nelson Taylor, who he was still at, I presume, at headquarters.
Yeah, well, the technical storeman was in the squadrons was more or less on his own.
So you were the technical storeroom.
Yeah, and he worked in conjunction with the sergeant fitter, and he didn't have a. I suppose the quartermaster had a certain amount of authority over him, but not much. You were mostly on your own there, and you had to keep things right. Or
what you carried, you had the stuff in bins. Wasn't there a lot to carry, or did you not carry much of everything?
Well, you carried it quite a lot. The technical stores, when they were loaded, they were quite a big job, really.
Would you not just leave them on the lorries, or would you really unload them into a?
No, they were always unloaded because none of the lorries were specially for the stores. They were used for general running about, general work, taking troops around and going to Newry and things like that, and Liberty trucks.
So everywhere you went, they'd be unloaded.
That's right, yeah.
And you'd have a building. I mean, how big a building would you need to cut?
Well, you've got an idea how big a Nissen hut, a normal Nissen hut was. Well, in Bessbrook we had half of that, and the other half was there was the non-tech stores. So that's more or less how it worked. Depending on where you were, you might have a building, a garage or something like that, if you landed in a different town.
Anything else about Bessbrook? Had you got to know McIntosh at all by then? Because he left while you were there, but I just wondered, Sandy McIntosh, the Colonel. I mean, not personally, but I mean, what did you think of him?
I thought he was a fine man, and I thought he was. He had tremendous sense of humour. We were really devastated when he left us. I think you always thought he would be there all the time. That's more or less what the position was when he left. We were all sad.
Was he competent in your view?
I think he was, yeah. I don't think any of us were really we hadn't been in action or anything, so we didn't really know what it was all about.
But what about McIntyre, Fergus McIntyre? He seems to have been a bit of a character.
Yeah, well, we never had much to do with him, but...
Not really aware of.
No.
What about Alistair Grant?
I was.
He was just a young, he wasn't so senior then, he became a major later on. What was he like?
We called him Awag, because his name was A.W.A. Grant, so he became Awag. I think we liked him, really. But he was a little bit of a joke, really.
In what way?
Well, much later, when we went overseas to France and that, he managed to get hold of a caravan, an army caravan, and that's what he used to sleep in. But the last duty that the boys had to do was to dig a slit trench outside Awag's caravan about 6 feet deep in case anything happened during the night and he had to get up out of his bed and go into a slit trench, and he had to have it right outside the door.
Was he noticeably more nervous? And
I think he was. I think he was a wee bit. He had a blink, which is a sign of nerves, I think. I don't know. He used to sort of blink a lot.
Was he a nice man? You know, I mean, a good officer?
Oh, I think so. I can't think. He was a fair-minded man. I mean, if you were on a charge and that, he reluctantly we'd sentence you to whatever it was, but he was a very fair man.
And what about Colonel Sword, who came in from McIntosh? He wasn't there long.
No.
Did you have much of Edward Sword?
He introduced a wee bit more bull, shall we say. He did. He had more inspections and... The only time I saw him is when he was marching about the tank camp and inspecting things. And he had this habit of springing himself on you, you know, trying to catch you. We thought.
so not so popular as
no, nothing like it, no.
Anything else about Best Book then before you left?
Not really, no.
I think the next move then is July 41, they went to Whitby.
Well, that's when I went on this course, so I didn't take part in the move. From, in fact, I left a young lad in charge of the stores, and he was a very sort of irresponsible chap that never did anything, really. One of the odd boys, and he was put in charge of the stores while I was away. And after the fortnight's holiday I had down in with the Queen's Bees, I came back and found I was on a charge. By this time, I was a lance corporal acting unpaid, which means I wasn't a lance corporal at all, I was just on probation, as it were. So, when I got back to Whitby, I was on a charge, and the charge was that I had been irresponsible in the stores and had lost three bogey wheels, which were the wheels that went on a Bren gun carrier, you know, that was it. So I was on the charge and went up to see Sir John, and he was at OC, and he just looked at me and he said, "You're not very happy in that job, are you?" And I said, "No, sir, I'm not." He said, "Right, what would you like to do?" I said, "I'd like to get behind a wheel or something." And he said, "Right, do you mind being demoted to the ranks?" And I said, "No, not at all." So that was it. I was out of the stores and I was in a free man again, driving a 1500-weight duty truck all over Yorkshire. And from there, I got into, I was in B Squadron by this time anyway, so this time I got into a Valentine tank, which we were training on at the time in Yorkshire Moors.
So first you went to be a lorry driver?
That's right, yeah.
And then you...
Yeah, yeah.
Now, just we haven't mentioned him before. What about Sir John Gilmore? On tape we haven't. What did you think of Sir John Gilmore?
Everybody adored him. Everybody loved him. He was he'd been with us for quite a while, you see. And he's always been associated with the regiment. His father was before him, so he was just... He was the fife and four for yeomanry, as far as we were concerned.
A major was he then? I mean, as an officer?
Very fair and He was a quiet sort of man. He never interfered much, and he took everything that was there. I mean, Sandy Penman was his driver for a while, and he used to say some terrible things to Sir John. He called him Big Jock. So he, I mean, I think Sir John Gilmore was a man that was, completely free from any bad temperament or anything like that. I think he was a very nice man.
What about this period as a driver? You were just acting as a driver at the squadron headquarters?
Driver.
Did you have any particular job?
No, well, I had a lot of particular jobs because the duty driver was to be on hand for anybody that wanted to go anywhere in official capacity to pick up stores and things like that. And I went to places like Hemsley and Scarborough and all over the place. And it was really, I enjoyed it.